22. Joe Cervantes, he is the Jackson County State's Attorney, new to the job. First off, Joe, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you, sir.
So how do you like it? You know, there's always an expectation when you get into a new job and you have this vision and expectations. So were your expectations, have they changed since you've been in the big seat?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that they've changed, but it's definitely different when you're in here on the inside looking out. It's a very difficult job, and there's a lot of moving pieces. You learn right away about how many people depend on the work that you do every day. So, if anything, I've been more motivated, and that motivation's growing daily.
You know, it's interesting because it's never what you think. I was talking to someone from the Illinois Attorney General's office one time. And he says, "You know what? The number one thing, probably the number one thing we deal with in our office, when you look at it statistically, is fraud." And seeing, I guess it's movie and TV that, you know, guns and bank robberies, and you always think about this stuff, but I understand after speaking with you yesterday that you are on a project to help understand and get the details and the statistics so you can better understand what's going on in your county.
Yeah, right. Any good, you know, ultimately I'm a manager of this office, an administrator, and above and beyond a prosecutor. But in order for me to go forward, I have to see where I'm going. I have to see where I've been. Right now, I feel like we're flying blind, and I think a lot of state attorneys' offices are flying blind. I want to be data-driven, and I mentioned that several times on a campaign trail. The only way that I can do that, the only way that we can have true criminal justice reform, is to know what's wrong. We can't fix anything if we can't measure it. So I've had an opportunity to partner with SIU. In fact, it was my first meeting that I had the day that I got sworn in. Later that afternoon at 3 p.m., I had a Zoom with all the leaders, including the chancellor of Southern Illinois University. And right now we have a great program that we've created, and we'll be announcing pretty soon a partnership between the two where we'll actually have grad students in a number of different fields, not just criminal justice, but psychology, sociology, so on and so forth, to come into our office and open the files and look at where we've been, what we've been doing. And then that way I can decide and determine how we can do better in the future.
How long do you think will it take to conclude this project?
Well, I think it's an ongoing project, and we want to set it up so that it's we're always collecting that data. So it's difficult to tell, but I want data on my desk as we're getting it, as we're collecting it.
Yeah, which is saying something, because I often go out and say, for instance, suicide rates, homicide rates, rates of pancreatic cancer, it doesn't matter. And I'm reading statistics from 2017, and I'm going, can't we do better than that when something this hot is happening? I've often questioned that.
Yeah, we can do better. The answer is we can do better. And the discussion in criminal justice reform has been going on for decades now. Police are in the law enforcement community in general, federal and local, are only required to collect a certain amount of data. And even then, some of their data systems don't sync. And so it's time that we start, you know, moving in a direction where we're all kind of synced up and we're collaborating with each other and we have data so that we can do the right thing.
Jackson County State's Attorney Joe Cervantes is joining us this morning. One of the first challenges, and it was fresh, no more than you were in the office, and that is ordinances and county standards when it comes to mitigation enforcement. In particular, indoor dining was a focus of this. This presented you your first real challenge, didn't it?
It did. You know, we've taken a pandemic and we've made it political. And we've politicized one of the worst things that's happened in our country's history. And it's that. It's a roadblock. It's a barrier. It's a speed bump to us getting to a solution and having true public safety. And I've put my position out there several times. But nothing prepares you for situations like that. I'm not exactly sure if there's a worse time to come into an office where we're expected to make decisions like that.
How would you outline that, once again, the current status in Jackson County in relationship to your office and enforcement?
Well, you know, we're given the ability to enforce ordinances and codes, one of them specifically a code from the health department. And so the new ordinance in Jackson County allows the health department to ticket and give fines and even pull restaurant licenses should they feel that the conditions are unsafe. So we would ultimately prosecute those as they're given out and challenged in court. My position has been that I believe that you can safely do indoor dining, but I have a commitment and responsibility to the public for public safety, and I've always said that when those tickets come across my desk, when those issues come across my desk, I will pay attention to them, and I will look at them on a case-by-case basis. There's other areas that are actually given fines now. I know Carbondale, City of Carbondale is, and they'll probably say something similar to, you know, that their primary goal is to provide public safety to its citizens, so on and so forth. But I believe that as leaders, we also have a responsibility to protect the public in the least restrictive way possible. And I don't think that banning all indoor dining is the least restrictive way to be safe.
You know, you and I were talking a couple of moments ago about statistics and building an understanding. And I'm really kind of a nut about that stuff because it gives me a handle for somebody who sits in the studio so much. I can get kind of a handle on things. I can kind of understand it. It helps. And then I have to realize those statistics are human beings. And making that connection sometimes harder than others. And the reason why I mention that, Joe, is because some of the gun violence and a woman who had been shot at on Christmas reached out to me. Now, I shared this story with you in the name of the person who this was in Franklin County so that you know, I wanted to be above board, but I'm not going to mention her name on the air this morning, but I did tell Joe who it was. And so when you do those statistics with these SIU grad students, the ability to make that connection from a number to a human to the effect that's going on, because after speaking with her in detail about the effect this has had on her psychologically. Her vehicle was shot twice. She had a black vehicle that looked like a vehicle in another instance, and that there had been a number of these, as we know. I mean, we kind of used to call them drive-by shootings, but now it's people shooting at the cars that are driving by. This is one of the biggest challenges you face, and it is a difficult... You kind of know the numbers, but when it comes to the effect on the people itself and what it means to the community, I don't know how you get a perspective on that.
Well, you get a perspective by being in the community. You know, when I started campaigning, I said that the office should be open and that we should be involved with community organizations to know the city council members' names, to have the mayors on speed dial and counselors and educators on speed dial as well. The answer is you have to have the data, but at the same time, if you don't get into the community and if you don't reach out and do projects in the community, it's hard to do exactly what you said needs to be done, and that's to actually put a name and a face behind every number, behind every case number, behind every statistic. It's absolutely imperative that we do that. We'll be announcing pretty soon a stand-up of a citizens advisory board, the first one ever in Jackson County, specifically for my office. And hopefully in March, we'll stand that up, and we'll be able to have a good representation of the county being able to advise me and give me a connection that's long-lasting, a connection to the community, to community organizations, to neighborhoods, and to families that I would otherwise not have a connection with.
You know, I was watching these stories and reading some stories about the worst place to live in Illinois, and it was kind of like violence, gun violence in communities was a death knell, it seemed like. People leave, and people who might come don't come that otherwise would. And when I was speaking with Mayor Henry about this a week ago Wednesday, I believe it was, he was kind of specific in this respect, that these shooting at cars and back and forth. Housing was closed down in Cairo. Some of those people came to Carbondale. They were already in a turf war, gang war, whatever it is, with a group in Mount Vernon. And so now that war has shifted Carbondale, Mount Vernon, Carbondale, Marion, I guess, to some respect. Is that correct?
Well, you know, that's the information that we get, you know, and I'm not going to buy into the fact that there's a war going on right now. I think that's hyping up some issues that may not be there. There's definitely some issues that we have with our community and conflict resolution. Getting data is very important, but I'm going to guess and say that a lot of the data is going to tell us that these young kids, they don't know how to resolve situations. And we're going to have to get on top of that. Why do young men and women feel that they need to carry a gun with them at all times and resolve? And usually these conflicts are over drugs or over money or over, things of that sort.
Personal relationships.
Without a doubt. And so, you know, it's important to prosecute on our end, but at the same time work the other end and make sure that some of these younger men and women, these young men and women, are learning and growing with the proper mentors and teaching them how to properly resolve conflict. So we're gonna work on that.
That bothers me, that thought that I've got to have a gun before I'm safe and I'm in high school. That bothers me because we had an incident on a bus a while back, and I'm sure you're aware of it. It's been a couple of years back. But that mentality, I struggle with that.
Yeah, we all do as a community. You know, I think that if there's a failure, it's in that. It's in teaching youngsters how to deal with emotions, with feelings, and with communicating. It's a big deal, but it's nothing that we can't fix.
I can't help but media, social media, and I can't help but think, oh no, that's when you literally have police dropping into rap video shoots because everybody on the set has a gun. That we've in some way incorporated that into the culture of you're not a man unless you've got a gun. And I think, and I know, I've been in music since I was a kid. I just still think there's some responsibility there, and we fail to recognize that, and we go on glorifying it on a lot of different levels.
I wish that we would have some more outspoken people that are in that industry that would come out and not just talk about the dangers of doing drugs, but also the danger in having guns and in carrying guns. And it's something that we're going to be focused on. It's something that we're going to work on. Next month, we'll be standing up a meeting that we used to have a long time ago with detectives that specialize in juvenile law, with our juvenile attorneys, with educators, just so that we can keep on track and make sure that we're putting the programs out there and we're exposing ourselves to the right type of situations to try to prevent these things from happening.
Do you have how much do you know about this police reform bill and what's being presented? Because I've seen some other states' attorneys post on this in detail, and there's a lot of concerns: cashless bail, indemnity for police officers being able to staff, the status of drugs and personal use for meth and heroin and units there. There's a lot in this and a lot to unpack. What do you pick up as concerns and or good points that should be endorsed and move forward?
Well, you know, I had several phone calls with the Illinois State's Attorneys Association, pretty much every state's attorney in the state of Illinois, and we've talked about this. You know, this bill is nothing that we've had an opportunity to look at for very long. I mean, I was told on Thursday that it came out the day before, so it kind of hit us all very quickly. Now, I joined the ISAA in expressing my disapproval of this bill. A lot of it is law enforcement, directed, and so I think there's a lot of police departments, law enforcement agencies are going to have to deal with that. But my particular interest, and I haven't posted on it all, but I am in communication and helping in negotiations to push our ideas forward on this bill. I will tell you that cash bail is one that's very troubling to me. It's something that prosecutors use as a tool to keep the public safe. And it's one of those things that there are stories of horrible things that have happened because there was a cash bail and someone may or may not been able to afford getting out. But for the most part, when you have a prosecutor in the office that pays attention to what's going on and knows who's in jail, those problems don't exist. And I believe that this bill is a neighborhood killer. There are some issues with this bill that I believe would lead to increased violent crime, to increased misdemeanors. There's a lot of issues with it, and I don't know if we have enough time to go into detail about it.
All right, when it comes to this cashless bail, we've already got a taste of it, and it's not good.
Right, yeah. So there's been models of it throughout the country. I know that one model in the East Coast, after a few months of no cash bail at all, the legislators went back into session and actually started naming some additional offenses that judges can impose cash bail for. Illinois changed theirs with the Bail Reform Act in 2017. And I actually like that change after I've seen what this bill is trying to do, eliminating all cash bail. Would devastate areas. And I think that suspiciously, one of the only state's attorney that agrees or supports this bill is probably the Cook County state's attorney. And I'm not exactly sure if Southern Illinois should be taking direction from the state's attorney of probably one of the more dangerous places in this country. I want them to get a handle on crime before they start advising Jackson County or any other county for that matter on how to conduct cash bail and anything else with criminal justice reform for that matter.
All right. Now, you take Joe's comments. Joe Cervantes joining us this morning, Jackson County State's Attorney, and the Chicago Tribune article yesterday stating that in Chicago in 2020, carjackings doubled, 135% increase. In 2019, 603. In 2020, 1,415. And the Tribune went on to say it's probably higher because if the driver is killed in the process, it's not called a carjacking, it's called a homicide. So chances are it's larger, and then they went through a litany of items. So the people have the crime problem, so our solution is not necessarily good for our solution down here in Southern Illinois. Before I let you go, curious about another thing. With COVID-19, virtual justice when it comes to this, how are you adapting to that? Because it's been my experience, lawyers looking at juries and judge and body language, and instead of just a faceless one-dimensional, that there's a lot of things involved that may not be appreciated here, and it's an expensive proposition as well.
It is, and while we focused on healthcare and we focused on restaurants during this pandemic, what people haven't focused on and kind of overlooked is that our court system, our criminal justice system, wheels are still turning. Our judges, our sheriff's office, our law enforcement, I tell you what, they've done a great job adjusting to a very, very difficult time. We couldn't just close shop. We have to continue making sure the community is safe. Now we're doing it a lot of ways. We're utilizing technology. And I think Jackson County's led the way in that recently. Now we are conducting some hearings via Zoom, but a lot of times what's happening is the defendants are getting an opportunity to be advised and admonished, and they get to determine whether they want to have that hearing. We won't do trials via Zoom or anything like that, but we can have hearings, and it's usually up to the defendant. And I think it's also increased some of the appearances of individuals. It's very difficult during this time to get around, and a lot of people are out of work, so on and so forth. So we've seen an increase in individuals actually appearing via Zoom for minor offenses, traffic misdemeanors, so on and so forth. So I think that we've handled it very well, and we're going to keep pushing technology-wise to make sure that we're ready to go forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it's easier to appear, so they do. I would have never thought that. Hand to God, I would have thought you can hide behind the screen, not be more available. Counterintuitive. Joe, final thoughts before I let you go. Joe Cervantes, he is the Jackson County State's Attorney. We covered a lot of territory today. Is there any messaging you want to make sure the people of Jackson County hear before I let you go today?
Well, this bill is going to be in the news pretty soon. It's House Bill 163, I think, has changed names recently. Look, I support criminal justice reform. I ran on that, but I can't support that bill the way that it's done. You know, a 611-page proposed bill being presented during a lame duck session. I am a stakeholder in this decision, as are the people of Jackson County. And this bill passing during a lame duck session is not the way that we're supposed to do business. We need a seat at the table. And I think it's dangerous for this community to pass this bill. But I appreciate the time, as always, Tom. And if you have anything at all, let me know.
I appreciate you making yourself so available. Do you mind if I share one more thing with you before I let you go?
Please.
Jason Olson, state's attorney, Pope County, posted this yesterday afternoon, saying late this afternoon, the Illinois legislature changed House Bill number 163 to House Bill 3653 SA1. You cannot file an opposition slip to the bill unless they assign it to a committee. In addition, the legislature does not have to send House Bill 3653 SA1 through a committee because the language is substantially similar to its original posting. Now, House Bill 3653 SA1 can now go directly to the House floor for a vote. I thought that was an interesting observation from the state's attorney from Pope County.
Right. Yeah, Jason's on top of it, as are a lot of other state's attorneys. We have a call today to discuss this again. And finally, this bill, without a doubt, no matter what you call it, no matter where you put it, if this passes, it undermines public safety. It's a slap in the face to victims. And this bill is an overall neighborhood killer. It can't be passed in this way.
It's interesting. I was speaking with a police chief from Heron, who recently retired, Quinn Laird, who called it a fundamental and detrimental effect on all communities. And I think when you said neighborhood killer, you nailed it right there, too.